Hello again, and welcome to another episode of our podcast, Everyone Has a Story. This is the podcast that complements the two quarterly lifestyle magazines, Hello Sunshine Magazine and In Noosa Magazine. The big bumper summer issues of both of those titles on the streets right now. Okay, on with today's episode. Diamonds form over time under extreme temperature and pressure. Today, you'll meet a woman who, just like the formation of a precious gem, has built a successful business and brand following several obstacles. Life has tossed Sandra Greenberger a few curveballs, low self-esteem growing up, a broken marriage that left her with two small children, and then the loss of her driver's license and subsequently her full-time job. Sandra will tell you that there were occasions when she was curled up in a ball on the floor. However, the result culminated in the purchase of her own business, even though she had no experience at all at ever running one.
So I purchased the business about 12 years ago after losing my license for talking on my phone and speeding. And I had my business in Port Fairy for 12 years and grew it tenfold from like 300,000 turnover to 4 million.
Wow.
We decided drunk one night that we should move to Queensland, and that fun during COVID, and that grew legs. And our girlfriend bought us a house sight unseen in Budrum. We're one of those Victorians.
Right.
And I had been commuting every 6 weeks to Melbourne and then a 4-hour drive down to my business. I had 8 staff, and something just my manager resigned in May, and I made a snap decision. It was just, I've got goosebumps now, all meant to happen. I was in Perugian Village when she rang and resigned. I was due back in Port Fairy 3 days later, and I looked up and the florist said it was for lease. And I just walked in like a zombie, and she said, "I'm sorry, it was taken." We got chatting. She was from Ararat, so she was from near where I was from. And she rang me the next day and said I could have the lease. And it went from there.
Yeah.
We just made a snap decision to move the business up here.
Yeah, right. So you said you're the owner of the business. Are you a designer or a creator at all? What was your interest in going down that path of jewellery and design? What kind of spurred you on to purchase that particular business, Sandra?
Well, as a woman, I love jewellery and I love diamonds. But to be honest, after losing my job for speeding and talking on the phone, I lost my job as a manager at TAFE because I had a car with that job.
Right.
And I lost my license, so they pretty much fired me. It was the most humiliating thing in my life. And I walked past the jewellery shop in the small town that I lived in, and it was for sale.
Right.
So I thought, well, I'll buy it, because I was buying myself a job.
Right.
That was pretty much it.
Yeah.
Then I began designing. I didn't like the shop. I didn't like the jewellery that it had. So I proceeded to be ahead of my game and travelled to international jewellery fairs and was bringing back like the latest looks from New York and Europe, which weren't selling. Like, I was about 5 years ahead of the game.
Yeah.
And then things started booming a couple of years later. And then when COVID hit, I started designing and making all of our own pieces.
Right.
Because we couldn't travel.
Yeah. I love your honesty, because I was wondering at the top when you started talking about losing your license, and then I thought, well, what was, so the reason was you lost your license, you lost your job, and so then you were looking for other avenues in terms of, well, I need to either, what am I going to do, pick myself up at the floor and I'll start my own business. So that was your catalyst and your motivator for owning your own business, I suppose.
Yes, and I couldn't actually get a job. I was applying for lots of jobs in administrative roles and management roles, but I was overqualified for admin and underqualified for management.
Yeah.
So I just thought, well, I'll just buy a job.
Were you nervous at that stage? Had you owned businesses in the past?
Never in my life. I was scared shitless. And my husband, bless him, decided to, as a surprise, invite a lot of our friends down for the opening weekend. I was horrified.
Yeah.
Absolutely horrified.
So where does that spirit come from? Where does it come from, your mum and dad? Where did that, I mean, that takes a lot, if you don't mind, that takes a lot of balls to go, okay, you know what, I'm going to go into business. I've never run a business before.
It does take a lot of balls. And the girls at the old shop used to call me the big rig. People are pretty scared of me in the industry because I'm a really hard go-getter. So moving to Queensland, I've had to really slow it down.
Yeah.
I think from my dad, he was very entrepreneurial, but it was just a decision I made over a coffee with a girlfriend. I tend to make very snap decisions, I guess.
Yeah. I'm also interested in how, you said then the business started to boom and you started to get interested. I know as a woman, you're interested in jewelry, but were there specifics in terms of design and the kind of jewelry that you design? Like what was your creative inspiration, I suppose? What was it that made you suddenly a great designer of jewelry?
Well, initially I was bringing back pieces that I loved, and I've had to grow out of that and learn to source and make what my clients love. So initially I just bought what I love. I think I'm confident enough now, I never used to be, to say that I've got good style and I've got good taste and I can really put that type of thing together. I love nice things, so I would pretty much buy what I loved. But as time went on and I had very regular good clients, when I would travel, I would look at a piece and think, well, Julianne would love that, or Sarah would love that, or Dorothy would love that. And so I would buy pieces in my mind that I knew that my clients would love.
I want other people with potential entrepreneurial brains to listen to this and go, okay, because I want to pick your business brain now a little bit, Sandra. Because, okay, big challenge to go, I've never run a business before. This is what I'm going to do. I'm going to buy this jewelry shop. And I've never designed before. This is what I'm going to do. And that started to take off. But the fact early on, you said you grew that business to over a $4 million turnover. What was your, did you have a plan for the business? How did you do that? What was your goal for growing that business and attracting customers to that brand?
I literally never had a goal. I never had a plan. I build relationships with my clients. I remember that first year, someone would come and spend $2,000 to $5,000 on a piece, and I'd be like, "Oh, well, that's it. I'll never see them again." I was horrified. I used to get anxiety.
Why did you
But
think that?
people, well, I'd never been in the industry before. I didn't understand. I was not someone who had purchased jewelry or purchased multiple things. I only had very few pieces, and someone would come and buy something, and I'd be like, well, they're not going to come and buy something else. But you'd be amazed how many women buy jewelry.
Yeah.
Like, I'm still shocked at that, and I get that repetitive business because I build a relationship. I really look after my clients. I'm very honest. I've got no filter. I work very closely with my clients. I will show them different options. I've still got a number of clients from Victoria that just send me their old jewelry, or send me a stone, or just say, make me a ring. They just know that I'm going to get it right the first time, that they trust me so much.
So apart from, and I've heard this again a number of times from talking to other business owners, that word relationship comes up a lot. And one of the lines I think from Matt Hobson, one of the guys from Sunshine and Sons Distillery, his line was, "We're not a transactional business; we're a relationships business." And it sounds like that's the cornerstone of the kind of business you're running as well.
Absolutely, and honesty is the key. I know I treat people and build my business the way I like to be treated. Like, if I go and try a dress on and the lady in the shop says it looks fantastic and I know it looks like shit, I can't deal with that. So I will say exactly what I think. I also think about the future of their jewelry and how it will work with their other pieces. I don't just sell jewelry. I say, bring your jewelry in. Let's have a look at what you've got. Let's look at how everything matches and works together, and you can build on this collection.
Yeah.
Like, you can buy diamond hoops and you can wear them every day, but don't buy another pair of earrings. Let's make drops to go on those hoops. So everything's very modifiable, and I am about value, and I cater to everybody's needs. Whether you've got 500, 5,000, or 50,000, I will hunt down what you need in the world. I love it. I love looking for that goose that laid the golden egg.
I love the language that you use, and I'm thinking as I hear you talk, you're working in an industry. How do we? It was a high-end industry in terms of the pieces that you design. Are you a bit of an anomaly when it comes to the kind of person that runs that business? Because you are straightforward and you speak your mind.
Absolutely.
So is
People.
that has that been challenging though? Like, what's that been like?
If I look back, I think I was very abrasive and assertive, and people, it's a very male-dominated industry. And
Right.
I look back and think, God, people must think I'm an absolute psycho. But I ask lots of questions. So that's how I've learnt along the way. I will ask questions for hours until they roll their eyes. And I said, yes, but how or why? And I love that storytelling with my clients as well, as where did this stone come from? Well, it came from a mine in Tanzania, but it's unheated and it was mined by these people, and this is how it got here, and my gem dealer's in Sweden.
Yeah.
I love all of that sort of thing, but I've calmed down a lot since the early days. but yeah, it's challenging.
Yeah.
Like, what does one of my suppliers calls me a ball breaker?
Yeah, well, I use that word. I was treading carefully, but I used that word earlier in just the terms of, in the short conversation we've had. You said you've had to turn it or tame it down. Why is that? You mentioned it was a male-dominated industry. Why have you had to change your...
I think I've just calmed down. I used to be a bit more of a party girl and have a really good time, and I'd be bang, 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 and I'd be in there and I'm like, I'm not paying that for that. I'm not doing this and I'm not doing that. But I've also built relationships with my suppliers over the years as well. So that's made me calm down a bit. I used to be out there looking for the best deal for my client every single time. But now I'm more about relationships with my suppliers, because they're also, it's just learning. They're also going to be looking after me and saying, okay, we've got this. I know Sandra will love that, you know, things like that.
Yeah. And where,
because I had no history, no experience in the industry. I had no idea how it worked.
Well, and so where did all that learning come from? I mean, you were talking about was it a gem dealer in Switzerland, the mine in Tanzania? Did that, all that learning come on the job?
Absolutely. I read a lot. I took my husband to Paspali Pearls because I wanted to learn about South Sea Pearls. So I went in with him and I was looking at these beautiful $25,000 pearls, and I'm sitting down, I'm having a cup of tea, I'm asking all of these questions. They're telling me the whole story. I looked at my husband and he was white, and I said, what's wrong? He goes, I don't feel very well. I need to go outside. And I said, oh, excuse me. And we left and I went outside and I said, what's wrong? He goes, I can't believe you're going to spend $25,000 on a fucking pearl. I said, I'm not. I'm just learning. I'm just having a lend of them. He was horrified. He said, well, you had me convinced.
What does he do for a living? I'm interested in the dynamics and the...
He was in local government for 25 years in senior roles, directors.
Okay. And does he still like have his career path, or is he involved in Leskies, or what does he do?
Well, when we moved up here, he retired. And our plan was to semi-retire, and he was working on the business, not in the business, from behind the scenes. And he's now thinking about, you know, now that we've transitioned up here, going back into a senior role in local government. But for the last couple of years, he's looked after me and the dogs and the house.
Right.
Because I need a lot of looking after.
Why is it? Why do you say that?
Because I'm a queen. I'm a princess.
Oh, is that it? I thought there might be something else that I need to know about you, Sandra.
No. I work very hard. I work very long hours. I'm always doing everything.
Yeah.
I'm a control freak. I'm a multitasker. The word ADHD has been thrown around, but I'm not labelling myself that, because I wouldn't be where I am if I didn't do what I've done.
You mentioned earlier when you started you had no plan or no goal. Now that the business is established, and it's a significant business in terms of the turnover you were talking about, do you have a plan or a goal? Is there like an end? Are you working towards something? Do you have goals now as a business plan?
I manifest having Leskies One at Sunshine Coast Airport to go wherever I want. But no, this is a 5-year plan.
I'm guessing that's a jet.
Yes.
not another retail space, but actually like
no,
a jet. Right, I get it.
we have a 5-year plan. I have an amazing manager, Mel, that has come on board. So I had no intention of bringing the business up here. And on the 29th of April, I was actually asked straight out by someone in the industry from up here when I was opening. And I said, I'm never opening a place on the Sunshine Coast. And 10 days later, I would say my world came crumbling down, and I made a snap decision to open a business up here, and we went back to Port Fairy. We worked 64 days straight, closing down the business, But what we didn't expect was that 232 people would want Alesky's engagement ring or dress ring before we closed. So we were absolutely dumbstruck that we had 232 custom orders in that 6 weeks.
I probably already know the answer to this, but I ask from a business perspective, people that hear your story and are inspired by what you've done. Did you have a plan B when you went into the, like, did you go, well, I want to do this, I'm going to purchase this. If this doesn't work, then this is my out, or this is my safety net, or this, is that how you operate or
no,
not?
No, I had no plan B. People say that I'm lucky and that I always fall on my feet, which I really think is offensive because I work really, really hard. So before I bought the business, I had very large investments in shares. And I had a very, very big portfolio, and the share market came crashing down and crashed back in, I don't know when it was, the last share market crash. Anyway, I lost everything. I lost my house because I had a margin loan. So I went from having like a $750,000 house and a $3 million share portfolio to having to borrow $30,000 off my sister to get out of the margin loan without them taking my house. Right. I was curled up in the corner of the lounge room, hysterical. That was probably about 3 years before I bought the business. And so I went from that to nothing. And then I woke up in the middle of the night a couple of months later, and I just said to my husband, I said, why don't we rent our house out on the beach as an Airbnb and build a like GJ Gardner or Metricon home in a little street, and that will provide an income. So we did that, and we ended up bringing $100,000 a year in through the Airbnb.
Yeah.
So that lifted us back up again, and then I bought the business. But after a couple of years, I couldn't manage the Airbnb and run the business, so we sold our property there. And then the business, I just focused on the business.
Yeah. Who come up with that? I mean, that's a great idea. What you just said, you had a great property. You saw the value in the rental market, the short stay rental market, in terms of that kind of, not a lot of people think of those strategies like that. Was that your idea? Is that?
It was my idea, but I come up with these my best thinking times, 3 a.m. Like,
yeah. Well, it's not a harebrained idea. It's just, you know, there's a lot of talk about the property market now, and you see young 20 somethings, you know, standing, especially in Sydney and Melbourne, standing out the front of a McMansion that's millions of dollars, and then there's, you know, the news story says they have to borrow, you know, blah, 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 blah. And you go, why don't you just get a rental, start small and build it that way? You know, the rental doesn't have to be in the place where you live. You know, these strategies, people don't think like that, though. This is why I'm curious as to why you went, you know, I've got this house that's worth this. I'm going to do this. Then this will give us this. And then we can, you know, you mentioned the GJ Garden, the home. And then we can do this. These are that was your strategy that you came up with, but people don't generally think like that, Sandra.
See, that's what my husband tells me, but I think everyone thinks like that. But
no,
I don't get it.
No, they don't. They don't think like that. The other thing I wanted to ask you, again from an inspirational point of view, what's your coping mechanism? Do you talk to someone? Do you have a therapist? Like who do you bounce?
No, I don't. Alcohol is my coping mechanism. And I really don't, to be honest. In fact, last week was the first time I started seeing someone to learn about worthiness and self-esteem and things like that. So, because I don't feel like I'm a success. I've been like, I feel like I've been a rat on a wheel for 12 years with my head down. Mm. And having all of those clients buy 232 pieces before I closed my shop, it gave me a realization that, wow, I'm actually really successful and I'm really loved in my industry and I've done an amazing job and people think I'm fantastic. And that shocks me to the core because I've never stopped to think about that. And when I did close my shop, I actually took off overseas with my son. So when this all happened, I was going overseas with my son and his girlfriend and I was howling. I'm like, well, I can't go. And my husband said, yes, you can go.
Yeah.
I'll basically pick the shop up and bring it up here and sort everything out. And I said, okay. So I went overseas for 6 weeks the week after we shut the shop and pretty much lived my best life and had the best 6 weeks of my life. And that was my realization and my time to really stop and settle down and realize what I've actually done and what I've achieved. I mean, naturally, I could not have achieved that without my husband's support. And I think another strong element of that is my dad has been our bookkeeper or accountant. And if you think people in the industry are scared of me, they are terrified of him. So he has looked after my books as my dad, and he has my best interests at heart. So I think that's another reason why I've been so successful financially. Like, he's very, very good at what he does.
He's got your back accounting wise.
He does. Yes.
What do they call that? Is that called imposter syndrome, where people have success in a particular field but they don't feel like they're worthy of that success?
That word was thrown around when I saw this lady Caroline last week. So I've just started with her, and that's why I'm not opening 7 days a week here. I'm really trying to look after me. I've started this thing called journaling. I've never ever done anything like that. I'm just go, 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 go.
Yeah. But it sounds like, you know, a lot of successful people are the same, where they don't take a lot of time for themselves. Where do you think the low self-esteem came from?
I suppose we're getting down and dirty here, aren't we?
Oh, well, look, I'm curious. Again, this is, you know, I want this conversation to be something that people relate to, because you wouldn't be the only one. You know what I mean?
100%.
Like, people will go, she can do it, I can do it.
I look back and had a great childhood, and this therapist is saying it's something in your childhood. And I'm like, I had a great childhood. My parents were strict. We didn't have anything. We never went on holidays, but we camped nearby every Christmas, Easter. I had acne growing up, so I had a poor self-esteem. I considered myself to be very ugly. I married a guy who cheated on me consistently. I ended up leaving that marriage with two young children. So I think it was a combination of those things when I look back, that I felt unworthy, unloved, not good enough. And then I've met my current husband, who I've been with for 20 years, and our relationship's based on trust and respect, not jealousy and fear.
Mm.
Which was my past, I think.
It would have taken a while to overcome that with a new partner, though. If that had happened to you early on, though, you would have been suspicious, or did that take a bit of time?
I still struggle with that, but I'm such a control freak. I said to my husband in our launch, I said, now I want you to introduce me, and I want you to pass the microphone over to me and put your arm around and kiss me and say, here's my beautiful wife. And he didn't do that because he was so nervous. And I spoke to my therapist lady about this, and she's like, why do you think that was? I said, well, I don't know. I have to control the whole situation. I have to control everything. And I'm only realizing now what a control freak I am. Like, I didn't even think I was competitive. And my husband looked at me and he goes, are you serious? it's funny. I'm learning more about myself in the last year or two than I have my whole 57 years.
That's great. What kind of, let's just change gears. What kind of clientele? How would you describe your clientele?
Well, we have two demographics. So this is actually quite funny, because I've done avatars of my ideal clients, what they like, what they don't like, where they shop, what they eat, who they're friends with, what their pain points are. Mm. And I gave that to a marketing company lady, and she just looked at me and she said, who are you? You've already done all this. So my ideal client is obviously the engagement ring market.
Yeah.
Guys and girls. And my main market, which I really love, is women over 45, women who have a disposable income, women who love nice jewellery, women, I just relate to them. I have a great time. Like, I've probably made a dozen friends from clients.
All that knowledge, you said you did the avatar up for your two, you know, your demo for your business, and then you took it to someone in marketing. Who taught you that? Where'd you get that from?
Just my head. It just came to me.
Right.
We just wrote it down. I wrote everything down, and I spoke to my staff, and I said, okay, when the ladies come in, what do you think they're looking for?
Yeah.
I think some women's husbands, well, they're not there for them, or they're out buying boats or motorbikes or trucks and tractors and things like that. So they're like, well, why can't I have something really beautiful? I think I can relate to a lot of women. It's also a symbol of success. So I've written down everything that I felt as a woman my age, I sent the avatar out to some friends I know in different age groups and asked them questions, and I compilated all that information. And then every time someone buys something, I sit down with the staff, or with Mel now, and I go, okay, why did that lady buy? Why did she want that? What did she want it for? Right. How did she feel about it? So I really get down and dirty with that sort of thing with every purchase.
Sandra Greenberger from Leskies Jewelers was my guest today on Everyone Has a Story. If there are parts or of the conversation that you just listened to that you think are relatable, that you think someone else might get some inspiration and motivation from, then please feel free to share the link about on your social media platforms, and even you can text the link, copy and text the link to friends, family members, relatives, whoever. Until next time. Take care.